Welcome to the Manuscript Academy podcast,
brought to you by
a writer
and an agent
who both believe that education is key.
The beauty is the people you meet along the way,
and that community makes all the difference.
Here at the Manuscript Academy, you can learn the skills, make the connections, and have access to experts all from home.
I'm Julie Kingsley.
And I'm Jessica Sinsheimer.
Put down your pens, pause your word counts, and enjoy.
Well, hi, everybody. We are so happy to welcome Emmy Nordstrom-Higdon. Emmy is incredible in that they think about literature in a way that is both literary and high concept, which I realize are some few things we're going to have to extrapolate in a minute. But Emmy, I love how you see books. I love how you see writing books. And I love how you can talk about it in a way that gives them their multi-layered dignity and also makes them fun and easy to understand. And that's such a rare combination. So,
oh, thank you so much. Goodness.
Thank you for being here.
I was actually picking out books last night for a gift for my aunt for her birthday. And I was thinking to myself, I can't pick any of the books that I love because she's going to think I've absolutely lost my mind. So I have to pick books that I know that I love and also other people love. But I think honestly, the way I think about books has just been shaped from the weird stuff I've read over the years. And so I'm really grateful to all of, you know, those writers who do very bizarre things and make me think about books differently.
I think that's so valuable. Though, because it's almost as if when you read something, you learn it. You see an example of this can work. Here's proof this can work. And now that I have those neural pathways, I can follow them myself and put my own spin on them.
Yeah, I really feel like that's what's special about books, right? I think I started thinking about this when I started agenting, was like, what makes books special compared to, you know, like watching a movie or watching a TV show or whatever? And like, how often do we like sit and think about somebody else's ideas for the amount of time that we spend with a book? You know what I mean? And I feel like unless we're forced, unless it's like a classroom setting or like a series that we watch over years and years and years on TV, but I feel like your average reader who reads like, you know, 3 to 10 books a year, maybe, that's a whole month or more that they're just like chilling with your ideas in their head. That's pretty cool. I don't know. I can't think of many other circumstances in which people spend that kind of like brain power on someone else's kind of creative thoughts. So I think that's really special.
Well, and also everyone's vision and everyone's experience while reading that book is going to be slightly different because there's almost this collaboration, right, between what's on the page and what's in your head. And so your version of a fictional world is slightly different than your friend's version of a fictional world, which is, it's all just very cool.
I always find it fascinating when I write things to see how other people interpret them, because so often it's like so far from what you imagine when you're putting it on the page. So yeah, I love that.
Or when authors write query letters and they're like, but it's so clear. No, I have no idea.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what I'm hearing from both of you right now is that the storytelling is being pushed in all kinds of different directions right now. Are you guys seeing that? What are you seeing in the inbox?
Yeah, honestly, I hope that that's always true. That's the beauty of publishing, really, is that there are so many different stories that can be told, right? And I think the trick with querying and with selling books as an agent in the traditional marketplace is sort of finding the balance between what cool, awesome things people are wanting to do and how to find ways to make those books relatable and appeal to like literal thousands of other humans, right? So I feel like that's really the big challenge of being an agent. Like when people ask me what I love about my job, it's like both what I love and hate is that you have to kind of find this balance between what's marketable to like a huge mainstream audience and like what you personally as one human want to read and think is really exciting. So yeah, I think that especially when we're talking about queries and things like that, the challenge is how do you take this story that is this unique, precious gem in your mind? And if you want to tell that story to a huge number of people through a traditional publisher, like how can you convey what's cool and special about that in a way that lots of other people will get it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so incredibly difficult that we ask people, make this multi-layered thing that's unlike anything I've seen before, and tell me about it in one line or in one elevator ride or in one page.
Yeah, absolutely. Expressions on people's faces when you tell them that their whole query letter should ideally be like 400 words. It's always just like, I'm sorry. Like, I know that it has to be because I know how long I have to read people's query letters. And also, this is not what authors are prepared for, right? It just isn't.
Well, it's a totally different part of your brain. I mean, So when you're going to do that, you know, it's like you've been like in this expansive world where you can like, You know, roam around and then it's like, gonk.
For sure. And I mean, I'm sure you've done this too. Like you go to a writing workshop or something and like the whole vibe is always play, be playful, let yourself like be free on the page. And then you come to a query workshop or something and you're like, okay, so we are looking for three specific elements in this first paragraph. And it's like, okay, we just kicked the fun out of the room a little bit. You know, you have to find ways to like make that process still enjoyable and creative in their own way.
Well, I think it takes an immense amount of creativity to have your beautiful, unique, lovely, nuanced project over here and your I am going to follow all of these rules that agents and publishing have imposed on me over here. Totally. And it's almost translation as an art. Mm-hmm. Translating this big idea into this package.
Yeah,
is an
100%.
Art. And I can't wait to hear you talk about it. So, Emmy, you have generously offered to give a free workshop to our listeners and our friends in the writing community. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening? And it will be Tuesday, May 7th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's available all around the world, wherever you got the internet. Emmy, what's it going to be like?
Thank you. No, honestly, it's such a nice opportunity. I love to be able to offer things for free because I feel like, you know, we're all out here doing our best. So I love offering things that are open to everyone. And this one I've tried to make as general as possible and as easy as possible while keeping the complexity of the ideas. So it's a query and first pages workshop. We're going to go through those two super important elements of a query package. I've included some really useful checklists for writing your query and also your first page. And I've tried to break each one down into its component parts so that they're really, really simple to understand. And that way we can dig into each one of them and really get into the meat of why they're important and how to achieve them most effectively.
So one thing I love about your structure is that you start in a place anyone can understand. Here 100%. Are these components. Yeah. You can do it.
First draft, ready, go.
But then you talk about why in such an insightful way. I love that. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the work going on behind the scenes when they accomplish some of the goals of your checklist?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really appreciate that you say that. I think that I overthink everything. So being given permission to do that in front of other people is like such a luxury. But yeah, definitely. So for example, there are three kind of important sections of a query letter. That's the like really basic. You need your metadata paragraph, you need your summary, you need your bio. Those are sort of like the 101 places to start. So if anybody has not written a query before, we'll go through really simplistically, what are the things that you need to start with? For people who have been querying, or maybe this is like their second or third time around, it does happen. It's completely normal. And it's also incredibly frustrating. So we'll dig into the elements of what makes a really effective query letter. So when someone gets it among the 30 queries they're going to get that week, when you start reading, what is the difference between a query letter that you're like, okay, this is fine, and a query letter that's going to fully stop you in your tracks and make you super excited to read the writing sample that's going to follow. That's always my goal, is that like the query is kind of like the ticket to the writing sample.
Well, and it's such a microcosm for all of these other things that you have alluded to. Things like emphasis and tension and interest and directing the reader where you want them to go. And I love that this is true in your 300-page book. It's also true in your one-page query. Say more about that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. All the same concepts that are going to make your query letter and your first page really, really effective are ultimately what's going to make your whole project more effective. And even though we talk about query letters sometimes as though they're this like weird foreign concept that, you know, authors will only ever have to do one time and we're not really trained for them, all of those things. And all of that is true. What is also true is that the skills that you develop writing a really effective query letter, and especially writing a really effective first page, when they're drawn out over the course of your larger project, your book or your proposal, those are the things that are really going to keep people engaged, whether it's in the first three lines of your book or the whole 300 pages of your book. For me, I'm like such a lazy reader. I really like a book that pulls me through. I'm definitely like a millennial consummate that way, whether I'm reading like a literary fiction, like a very serious book, like an academic text, it doesn't matter to me. If those elements aren't there, like I'm probably going to be bored by it pretty quickly, even if it's something that I'm super interested in. So for me, having a high interest level is super, super important. And I think that that's what makes books appeal to huge groups of people as well, is having, you know, stories that really, really capture people's interest in order to be able to get across whatever message or thought-provoking thing you want to dig into in your book. So yeah, those will shrink down those concepts for the query letter and the first pages. So that's kind of the starting point. It's going to be the first thing that any agent or editor sees of your work, of your book. It's sort of like a, I guess, like a taste or an introduction to you and to your writing. So the query and the first pages, we'll go through each of the parts of those. We'll really break them down into their little elements. And then we'll take sort of the same principles that we apply to the query and to the first pages, and we'll bring them back to your entire project. So when you sit down to start to write, how can you apply those same elements across your entire project to generate interest overall?
One thing that everyone is, at least in the back of their mind, aware of is when you send a work to an agent, they can either be in a frazzled mode. You know, we don't have manuscript boxes anymore, but you picture this huge stack of manuscripts falling over. You picture the phone ringing. You picture the Zoom dinging, the calendar dinging, the email dinging. There's noise outside. Maybe they're like, oh gosh, I'm late for lunch, and they're pulling on their blazer while like looking at their phone, running down to the elevator. You could have that kind of read depending on what you've written. Or you could have the kind of read that stops them in their tracks and they think, oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's I think the trick with query letters is there's actually not that much of a difference between those two experiences, right? I think the inside of my brain is always that frantic person. So the query letter that really stops me in my tracks, it's whatever breaks through that kind of frenetic day, right? I don't think many of us have time to like sit down and read things really leisurely. Actually, a friend of mine, when I first started agenting, she was telling me that the time when she reads query letters is when she was waiting for her infant child to fall asleep. So she'd sit in their nursery in the dark with her phone and be like scrolling through query letters while this baby was like falling asleep. And I always picture that, like, people are so busy, you know, like it's wild the times that we find to read, all of us. And so, yeah, that's always what I picture, is like, how do we break through that kind of everyday life part of ourselves and get to something that like really makes us excited? Because things do. That's why we do this work, right? It's definitely not for the money. I always tell people, like, you have to really love books. Like, that's really what you have to be excited about. So,
and it's amazing that something from a stranger can cause you to drop into a whole physical, emotional, aesthetic, sometimes magical experience where you are so present in that moment that it doesn't matter if your boss walks into the room waving paper. You don't care. I am like, here busy watching this sword fight. No, and I think that is such a beautiful gift you can give not only an agent, but a reader in this world, a moment of presence and calm and focus. Again, I realize this is a huge sounding to-do list, but I think you have, in a way, cracked the code on making it so that it's not, this is one of 40 queries I have to get through today. I have no idea what they're talking about, so I'm going to say no, versus I can feel everything.
Gosh, thank you. I mean, I hope so. I have read so many of them. I think part of the beauty of reading so many queries is that you read so many good ones, right? It's not like I'm sitting here with my query inbox, like rolling my eyes all day. That's absolutely not the case. I think more often than not, I struggle with, these are also good. What do I do? You know? So that's been, yeah, like a huge blessing in my life.
What is the difference between a good query and a great query?
Oh gosh, that's such a good question. I think, I mean, for me, it is that emotional piece. And I think in some ways that's a really difficult thing to teach because it depends so much on the project, right? Ultimately, it always comes down to the book. So one thing that I always tell people is that because I represent across age categories and genres, I don't think that for me, it's always an easy yes or no in terms of like a lot of people who have kind of a niche, it's easy to be like, oh, this book falls into my niche or it doesn't. For me, it's more about a writing sensibility and people who are really able to have their skill in writing come through in a query letter. That blows my mind because, you know, like it is easy to put together a checklist of like, these are all the things that have to go in your query. And often it's not until the writing sample that you actually get a feeling for like who this person is, what their book is about. But when you can actually get that feeling from the letter itself, like that's when I'm like, whoa, like you really know your project and you also know how to communicate it really, really well. And that's why I always tell people like as much of yourself as you can inject and like the voice and tone of your book into the summary paragraphs of your query letter. I think that's like invaluable because that to me is like when I'm sitting and reading a query letter and I feel like I'm already in the story, like I'm already invested after two paragraphs, that's when it like really blows me away, I think, next level.
So let's talk about tension, emphasis, and interest. Why are these the three components that take us from, oh my gosh, I have so much to read today to I am in this world?
Yeah, for sure. When we get into the workshop, the way that I've kind of structured it is with interest as like the general overarching theme, because I really think that that's, you know, it's a huge element of a book. And especially when you're competing in a multimedia market like authors in 2024 are, you know, like even 20, 25 years ago, pre-streaming, if we can still remember those days, you know, like you were only competing with whatever was on your TV at that time, or like whatever movie someone had taken out from the video store, or, you know, like what new CD had just come out. Like now it is a crowded media space because people can access all kinds of things at all kinds of times. And in some ways, that's like a huge blessing for authors, because also that's true of books too, right? Like your book can be discovered by someone who is on the other side of the world looking at your backlist, you know, 7 years after your book came out, which that was not always possible either. So I think that it's brought a lot of huge advantages, but capturing people's interest is really challenging. And that's true whether you're writing like a news article or whether you're writing a novel. And for, I think, longer works, like that interest is so essential. I was looking last night at sort of the difference between kind of like storytelling structure, the way that we are like traditionally taught to understand it, and the Save the Cat method that's become so popular in the last several years. And I think that in so many cases, there's actually not that huge of a difference. Like there's not that big of a gap between what story beats people were writing, you know, 30 years ago and what story beats people are writing now, but the interest level has to be so much higher. And so a lot of the methods that we use to kind of think about how to structure a story and generate interest over the course of a narrative, they've really added a lot of extra steps. And I think that the reason for that is because if we look at it sort of broadly, there's not enough places where people are pushing the pacing to be faster and pushing the emphasis to be harder and pushing the tension to be higher. And that's really what readers expect from a book. I think that they're sitting down to read, especially for entertainment today, which to be honest, I think is like 99% of reading. I think I don't mean entertainment to be like a dirty word. Like I think that that's an important component of books. And so yeah, that interest level just needs to be so high to be able to capture people's attention and also make them feel immersed in that world where they're sitting and watching a sword fight, even if they're in an office or like a cafe or whatever. I think that that's like really kind of like the overarching most important aspect of a book in a lot of ways, or of a narrative in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, what I've done is gone through sort of emphasis, tension, pacing, and then brought it back to interest at the end as elements that you can use really, really effectively to generate interest in your book. And not just like in the beginning to catch an agent's attention, but the whole way through. I always picture editors being even busier than I am. So ultimately, you need to keep like editors and readers engaged all the way to the end of your book, or they're going to get three quarters of the way through and they're going to like go on vacation and come back and forget that they were reading. And, you know, we don't want people to do that. We want them to be like really excited to hear what happens next. So
it's like the difference between like when you're on a plane and you're reading something and you're kind of stuck there, so you keep at it.
Yeah.
But I just had the experience of reading a book where I can't remember. I read it like 2 weeks ago. I don't remember who the main character is. I didn't care about the main character. The plot felt false to me. And I was trapped on a plane. I literally left it at the airport. And I'm not dissing like this. I'm not going to say who the book is, but it's so interesting, right? That We truly need, as readers, all of these things to be engaged. And if you write a book and 2 weeks later, someone can't remember the main character's name, whatever, you know, like, how do you change that? And I think just kind of being in the industry, for me, I was thinking, I had all kinds of edits. I couldn't read without wanting to edit it. And I think that when you can read a book without wanting to edit it, without wanting a change, that's where that magic piece is, right? That's where, like, you go and, like you said, like, as a reader, you're just immersed and you're there and you can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. To a certain extent, the plot and the characters and things, they're going to be different for every person, like what hits that magic kind of level. And yeah, the impulse to edit, I think that's where that comes in. There are so many tools that, like, when a book starts falling flat, you can go to those and sort of, even if you didn't change your plot line or your characters, if you were writing in a slightly different way and approaching your conflict in a different way or presenting it differently, it could have a totally different effect on the person who's reading it. And I think that's like, yeah, to be able to keep people like really entranced, I think you really have to go to those tools and know how to use them effectively.
Okay, so let's pop into your slides. Emmy, what do you have for us today?
Well, let me show you first the query. I love really cutesy slides. You have to remember I'm a consummate professional, always, of course. So I've made very cutesy slides, but I'll show you the query workshop first.
Whoop. I like the bear.
Thank you. I like the bear too. I love bears just in general. You will see bears on both of these presentations. So I've created this cute little magical bear for the Query and First Pages workshop. So yeah, in the mini workshop, what we'll go through is query letter essentials, and I'll give you a checklist of those, and then first page essentials and a checklist of those. And then I'll talk also just briefly about the other elements of a query package. Like, for example, I feel like lots of people have questions about synopses, so we can talk about that. And yeah, through the presentation, I've tried to make it as clear as possible. So really breaking down elements of a query into three sections, and the same thing with the first page. Like, what are the three things I look for? And at the end of each section, once we've kind of gone through all the material, I've made these little checklists that kind of show like each individual element that I think should be in each section. So if you write a query letter draft, polish it, whatever, and you go back to these lists, my goal is that people can go through and be like, okay, this includes everything it needs to include. And whatever the format that people have tried to use or the book that they're writing, they can go through. And as long as these elements are there, they should be covered in terms of what an agent actually needs to get. And I have the same thing for the first pages too. And obviously I'll go through each of these elements and how to achieve them effectively, what's important about them, why we need them, all of those sorts of things. No matter what you're writing, no matter what your project looks like, whether you're writing, you know, like a memoir or a picture book, a high concept literary novel, this query checklist will work for no matter what your project is or who you are, so that you can draft out your letter and then you can always return to this checklist and you can make sure that every single thing that an agent will need to get from you in terms of your query process and your looking for representation is in there. So when this lands in someone's submission inbox, they will have every little bit of information that they absolutely needed. And you can adapt this checklist to any kind of format. You can obviously add in things within the word count, but as long as you can go through and check off every element on this list, you can rest assured, you can go to sleep and not worry, like, did I include everything I needed to include? Will they be able to get in touch with me? All of that stuff. So I hope that it will make things feel a little bit less intimidating for people and they can sleep a little bit easier at night knowing that everything that they needed to get into this weird little one-page advertisement of you and your work is in there.
And could you just run through some of the items on the checklist, just a very quick, like, what each one is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've broken the query letter down into three parts, and then this checklist kind of breaks them down into their individual pieces. So the first part of a query is the metadata paragraph. In that paragraph, you want to include a personalization. So that's essentially where you tell the agent that you're sending your query to, or in the case of querying an independent publisher, that would be the editor, what it is that makes you want to work with them. So how did you find them? Why do you think that you'd be the right fit for them? Why do you think they'd be the right fit for you. You also want to include, obviously, and I know this seems obvious, but you definitely want to get that title in the metadata paragraph right up top. You want to explain the genre of the book, and that can be trickier than it sounds. A lot of people struggle with genre, so we'll break down kind of what genre actually means and talk about the different genres that we often see in query letters. Then also the word count of your book. So if it's a fully drafted manuscript, that's pretty easy to figure out. Or if it's a nonfiction project, and you're querying it as a book proposal, kind of what you hope the word count will be. Do you see this as being a really big volume or a little one? I'll also talk about the importance of word count and how writing for the traditional market, you do really have to think about the number of words that are in your final project. And then last but not least, two or three comps, which are books that you see your book kind of sitting alongside on a shelf. And we also want to talk about why we use the comps that we do. So each of these items might get a little bit complicated, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of those within the workshop. But in the checklist itself, this is a really easy reference to be able to go back and just look at the elements of your letter and be like, okay, did I get all the little details in there, or did I miss something as I was going through and revising? The workshop's theme is generating interest in your book. And the tools that I'm going to dig into for doing that are emphasis, tension, and pacing. So I think even though in the workshop we're just talking about that first page, all those same concepts transfer really nicely into this more in-depth look. I will take each of these elements and really break them down into their component parts. So you can see we'll go through what emphasis is, why it's effective, all of those things that are kind of on a higher level, and also like some examples of course, of resources that you can use to understand the concept better. And especially in the context of 2024, like what are some books that are really achieving this nicely so that you can go and read some things and be like, ah, yes, emphasis. Because it's one thing to talk about a concept, but it's a totally other thing to be able to understand it and to put pen to paper and make sure that it is coming through. And then we'll really go through the tangible how-to elements. These are things that when I am working as an agent, when I'm going through my slush pile, and when I work as a proofreader for smaller presses, I come across these things all the time and they drive me batty. And it's largely because when people are trying to achieve emphasis in a way that isn't effective, it becomes really, really difficult and distracting as a reader. So these are sort of like some of the elements to avoid. And of course, I'll go through and explain each one. And also, you know, there are always exceptions to the rule. So we'll talk about cases in which some of these things can be used sparingly. And then on the other hand, I have tried to offer as many tools as alternatives to those like easy shortcuts as possible. So we'll go through each of these one by one, and I'll show examples and explain how they can be used effectively to achieve emphasis. So for example, dialogue tags is my very first one. And this is like my new favorite thing to talk about. I love dialogue tags. I've really gotten into them in the last like year or so. It sounds super nerdy, but I promise it's really, really interesting and valuable, at least to me, and can really, really enhance your writing. So one thing that I find a lot is that, you know, people are trying to convey emphasis through the speech of their characters. And this is a great way to achieve emphasis because obviously something that matters to your characters is going to matter to your reader. But I find that people really struggle with how to do this. So we get a lot of like all caps, multiple exclamation points, words being used over and over and over again, the same expression, bringing back the same image. And it becomes really tiring as a reader. So one thing that I love is using dialogue tags, like he said, she said, on the basic level of your writing, to be able to convey to your reader that something that your characters are speaking out loud is meant to be emphasized. And so we'll give some examples and break down kind of how dialogue tags can be used to do that, as opposed to sort of reverting to little shortcuts in the dialogue itself that can become more exhausting emotionally for a reader to try and process.
Could we see the zoom in, zoom out slide?
Yeah, the second tool that I've suggested here is to use details to achieve emphasis. So the way that I like to think about this is zooming in and zooming out, because there are two really effective ways, I think, to achieve emphasis on a plot point or an object or really any element, I guess, of your book, a character trait, for example. So one thing that I see a lot is that people just want to be very, very loud when they want to achieve emphasis. I think that actually, in some ways, showing whatever it is you're trying to focus on, that element of your book, from different perspectives can really achieve emphasis in a more effective way. And it's a little bit quieter, but subconsciously, I think that readers process it a little bit more, and it feels a little bit more like showing rather than telling. So when I talk about zooming in or zooming out, I'll use an object just as an example, because that's the easiest. So if we have a very, very special pen that we want, you know, a reader to perceive, maybe it has sentimental value, maybe it's being used as a metaphor, maybe it's being used to convey a character trait, like someone is super wealthy and it's a fancy, fancy pen. I guess you could just describe it as you would anything else. But if you're trying to emphasize it, you can describe it using super teeny tiny details. So like, you know, can you see the color of the ink inside of the pen? Can you see the way that the light hits a pen? Can you see if it has like a fountain pen tip, or if it has a brush tip, or if it has a ballpoint? All of these elements that are very, very tiny, that would be what I would call zooming in. And you can do that not with an object as well. So you can do that with a sound, you can do it with a smell, you can do it with a personality trait. Giving that kind of like really granular, unique detail is something that I think readers love and brings out, you know, what's really special about you and your writing, because everyone's going to describe things differently. So that would be kind of the zoom in perspective. The zoom out perspective would be to describe it as though you're seeing it from like a universal way. The way that this achieves emphasis is to make something that may otherwise be very, very small appear larger in the bigger world or more significant. So, you know, in a sea of character traits, how can you spot from a mile away that this person acts this way? Or to go back to the example of the pen, rather than focusing on the tiny aesthetic details of it, you could zoom out and describe the office building that you're in when this person is holding this pen, or you could zoom out and describe the city that they live in a certain way. And those kinds of really unique, I guess, facets of whatever it is that you're describing are going to make the object or the aspect of your writing seem very, very special. And that's one way I think that's very effective to achieve emphasis.
Brilliant. Can you describe what emphasis does for a book and how it keeps an agent reading?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that one of the things that we talk about sometimes when we're reading is tone, and emphasis, for me at least, falls under the tone category. I mean, all of these concepts, I think you could describe them a lot of different ways, but this is how I think about emphasis. If you are reading a book and you read, say, a chapter, and it feels very, very flat, obviously that's not generating enough interest for a reader. So you need to use various techniques, I think, to make the book feel a little bit more like a roller coaster ride than a car ride through the countryside. And that's not to say that like the plot needs to be super loud or the characters need to be like super hyper wacky. But if you can create emphasis in even like slice of life scenes, it will make the ride more dynamic for the reader. And that's really, I think, what we're trying to achieve when we think emphasis. So traditionally, we think of emphasis as being things that we might put in italics, for example. So if you can think of reading a sentence and there's one word that you really want to pop out at someone, maybe that special formatting is how we would have traditionally done it in the past. When emphasis is overused, it can also become really, really exhausting for a reader because they're emotionally investing in the things that you're emphasizing in your work. So in terms of the technique itself, you want to apply emphasis when you want more emotional investment and then ease off when you want authors to be able to kind of take a break and step back. And that way, as you're reading, your narrative will have an ebb and flow that will keep readers coming back for more rather than just sitting and experiencing the book in a really kind of monotonous way.
I'm so obsessed by this, by the way. I cannot
Thank you
wait
so much.
Because I've been thinking it for a long time about emphasis. And I think what it does is it's cluing in the reader so that they can make their own meaning, because readers want to feel smart as they're going through a project. They 100%. Want to feel engaged just like that. And so when you're giving that to the reader and not explaining and not just, it just is, I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see how writers change scenes with this.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly, I think generating interest is like one of my favorite topics in writing, because I do feel like when it's done in a way that is clumsy or like maybe not as thoughtful, it feels like you're getting spoon-fed things, right? It feels like pedantic. It feels, I mean, it is sort of around this like show don't tell thing. It feels like the author is like holding your hand and bringing you along and sort of being like, this is what you should care about. But when it's done really, really well, it does feel like you're on the ride with them instead of, you know, being told what you should think or being told like where the story is going to go. And it makes the emotional core of the book stronger. And it also makes the twists and the, you know, little Easter eggs and the hidden gems of the book so much more effective. And I never like to see authors waste energy. You know, if you're going to have an amazing plot line that's going to pull me along and surprise me and charm me and make me laugh, all those things, like, or make me cry, I don't want you to waste time writing a book where I don't feel that with you, because that's just exhausting for you. And it's also exhausting for the reader, because they know what they're supposed to be doing, but they're not necessarily in that space. So you want to bring them into that space with you. I think that that interest level is what you really need.
Well, it's like the difference of going, there was a roller coaster, it was scary, versus exactly, we're going up, clunk, 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 clunk. You know, the yeah, like going up to the first hill. Oh God, how's it going to go? Yeah. You know, that is so much more interesting than being like, yeah, roller coaster, scary, twist, turns, the end.
Totally.
Now we're here. Kind of like also going with what you were saying before, we need these ebbs and flows. We can't just have a roller coaster that's straight across, because then you just have a train.
No. Well, and also, like, I am such an emotional person. Like, my emotions are heightened all the time. Like, they're 110%. So if I'm reading a book that's asking me to be like at 115% all the time, like, I'm not going to get through it. There's just no way. I'm going to get like a quarter of the way in and I'm going to be like, this is way too much for me. I'm putting this down. And there is too much of a good thing, you know, like, you do need those kind of rests in between to be like, okay, now we are just chilling together, these characters and I. And those are the quiet moments where you feel like you can really bond with a character, right? It's sort of like doing errands with your best friend. Maybe it's not your most emotional experience, but we're all going to go to Target together. It's going to be great. You know,
I was and just thinking those... Target.
Oh my gosh.
Like, we need those moments together too. And if you're constantly asking people to be like at the edge of their seat, then it loses its effectiveness as well. So it's yeah, so it's too yeah, much.
It's really interesting. So who should take this conference?
Depending on what stage you're at in your book, I think it could work for people who are kind of at any position, because I think a lot of those changes often come in revision, of course. So if you're neck deep in revising and you need like a fresh perspective, for sure, it would be useful. I also think, though, for people who are into planning, or maybe even for people who aren't, if you're at the beginning stages and you're like, okay, I have this awesome high concept story that I want to tell, like, how can I tell it? I think that it could help you avoid a lot of pitfalls that you would then have to go back and revise for. So I think that that's a really great position to be in. But especially, yeah, if you're working on a full-length book, I think that interest is something we don't always think about as we're writing and going through. If you have a concept and you're looking for the most effective way to tell it, whether it's, you know, maybe you've sent out a bunch of queries and you're not getting the responses you want, or maybe you are at the beginning stages and you are starting something brand new, I think that that could be great for a range of people.
I think a simple way of putting all of these concepts together is that this is a workshop to keep an agent reading. However, 100%. The reasons that it works are a bit more complicated than it would look yes, on the surface. It's not put the following things in your query. It's we as humans interpret literature in this way, and here's how to appeal to them subconsciously, consciously, as a reader, as a human. And yeah, just having these ideas around so that you can have almost this 360 experience for the person for your book. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not everyone has to do every single component, but we're talking about tension and emphasis and interest. And those are so many ways to guide a whole human into yeah, your work.
100%. One thing I've realized over the last maybe 2-3 years, especially, is how much readers' expectations have evolved and changed over time, too. And I really feel like the ways that we were taught, at least people who are like in the millennial-ish age bracket, the ways that we're taught in school to write a story are not the ways that readers expect a story to be set up now. When I was doing research for some of these elements to add to the presentations into the class, especially emphasis, I was just shocked at the ways that, like, there's just a lot of bad advice out there. And I think it's not necessarily badly intentioned, but it's advice that has really not aged well. And so I have hoped to kind of take the experience of sitting in a slush pile for many years and draw out the elements that have really worked over the last couple of years, rather than kind of what we've been taught traditionally works. Because I do think that, like, with the media landscape changing so much, and especially when everyone was in lockdown and just like consuming mass amounts of media, I really think that preferences have swung wildly in a direction that, you know, some people don't necessarily expect if they've been working on a book, especially for 5 years or 10 years, you know, and it may just take some updating and some knowledge of those expectations to take your manuscript to the next level.
What does it take to keep an agent reading in 2024?
Yeah, for me, interest is huge. So I love books that are like really, really propulsive. And I often tell this anecdote about an editor call that I had a couple of years ago now, which kind of boggles my mind because I think this has only gotten more and more prevalent in the industry. But it was with a young adult editor, and I don't think she meant it literally, but she said to me that if something hasn't exploded by page two, she's basically not interested in the book. And I don't think she meant like a literal fiery explosion. Although maybe she did, but for me, I really took this to heart because I like quieter books, but it is true for a lot of readers. If you are trying to capture someone's imagination, you need to have those moments of explosion, whether it's, you know, an image or an emotion or a character. We really look for that in books these days. And so there are various ways to achieve that. Obviously, we don't just light everything on fire in our books all the time. But to a certain degree, you do want to have those moments that feel really, really tense and really exciting and make you not want to put down a book. I mean, I think that's my favorite feeling in the world is when you have to close a book and it feels like devastating. You're like, no, come back. So yeah, I want people to have that feeling when they're reading. And I hope that, you know, those elements, really exploring them in the ways that they can be used effectively, can help people write books that are like that, because that's what I really want to read. So,
and when a query hints at that feeling, which it absolutely can,
for sure,
that is magic.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's a more exciting moment as an agent than when you read a query and you're like, oh yeah, I need to read this book right now. That is the magic that we are here for.
So writers, we'd love to have you join us on May 7th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time for a class where we're going to just dive into all the wonder that Emmy is going to provide us. We cannot wait. We hope to see you there.
And whether this is your first query or your 100th, you'll have something to learn here. We approach it with all of the basics that you need and also all of the why for those advanced learners.
And honestly, I feel like in some cases, it can be more beneficial if you're really tired and burnt out from writing a query to come to a class like this, because obviously you have some experience, but I think we can always, as writers, use, you know, a little bit of fresh enthusiasm in our lives when things feel a little bit tired and hard. So I would encourage people that, especially if you've been querying for a while, to come and see if there's something that you can do that might make you feel more excited about your query, because I think that will make agents feel more excited about your query too.
And if you're like me, and if every time someone tells you to do something, you're like, but why? now you can have the, oh, it is for a reason. They're not just messing with me. Okay.
No, I promise. Also, it's my birthday month in May, so it would just make me happy to see people there.
Oh, Emmy, I wish we could give you a cupcake through the screen. Well, thank you so much. We absolutely can't wait. This is a great thing you are doing for writers out there. Well, and I hope you're going to make so many writers feel so much better about their work and the possibility of pitching. It, the possibility of finding someone in this crowded media landscape and just showing them really how to get their vision on the page. Because what a shame if they have this gorgeous vision and they just don't say it in a way that 100%. Anyone else can see it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, for me, honestly, it's such a gift to get to work with writers because there are so many amazing stories out there that deserve to be told, and I want to read them. So I hope that this can help people find a way to describe them to other people in a way that lets them see how special they are.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay, we're so excited. May 7th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, link in the show notes or manuscriptacademy.com/Emmy, E-M-M-Y. Hope to see you there.
We are so glad that you joined us. And as always, we appreciate your feedback. Just head on over to the iTunes store and let us know what you think. It not only helps us make this podcast be the best it can be, but it also affects our ratings within the iTunes platform.
We'd love to hear from you. If you're feeling brave and want to submit your page for our First Pages podcast, you can send it to academy@manuscriptwishlist.com with First Pages podcast in the subject line. We'd also just love to hear from you.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Manuscript Academy and everything we have to offer,